and welcome into another edition of the Nicholas Allen Bar Podcast. The Nick Bar Podcast, Minnesota Recap Edition. Bo Root is with me. How many times are you and I going to see each other on a Sunday and have that look on our faces of, you hanging in there, man, you doing okay, because I've had it?
Nick, that's why they pay us the big bucks.
They pay us in $0 and 0 cents to do this. But therapy, my friend, is can't put a price on it. I guess, how was your week? Did you have a good week? Do we want to talk about your week?
I had a really good week.
Did you have a good week?
You know, it's another night. It's a tough loss. And I think we're all getting used to the, you better find your therapy. You better find your 24-hour rule or something, because if you let this, you know, affect you too bad, life gets pretty ugly.
It's rough. You know, this week I finally got TSA pre-checked.
Oh.
You need to do that. So when you and I do our, like, couple trips a year, we just cutting people in a line is one of the more powerful things you can do in this world. Let's be honest.
Well, and beating the airport system in any way just feels good, because I don't know what it is. We all get into those airports, and something about every little inconvenience
just drives
it magnifies.
You.
It's just like you get in there and it's like, what's? Oh, come on! You really need
what,
to
really
check,
what
check day, that bag too?
God, you know, it's horrible.
And we all fall into it. You just end up complaining more. And
I'm excited. I thought the whole process would be like you have to register online. And a lot of the stuff is like, you know, are you the lowest, like, you know, like, first question, have you ever murdered anyone? You're like, no. Like, okay, have you ever thought about murder? It's all of that just to get, like, an appointment set up.
Have you ever been convicted of a federal crime? Convicted? No. Never convicted.
Never convicted. But that, and then you go, and so then you have the appointment, and you have to, like, you have, like, a meeting. And I was expecting this meeting to be, like, you know, dark room, there would be like good cop, bad cop, like just cigarette smoke kind of going through the air.
Where were you on the July 7th, 1994?
Says here, according to your Blockbuster rewards card, that you didn't rewind Three Ninjas or Necessary Roughness upon return. Is that true?
I don't remember. It was a long time ago. And here's the thing. Is it true?
Is it true? Did you rewind or did you not? Did you ever not rewind a Blockbuster video?
It's been a long time.
Blockbuster was fun. Rewind. How much fun was Blockbuster?
It was great. You walk the aisles. It's better than grocery shopping. You go, you check out.
There was frustration of the movie you wanted not being there. I was a big fan of the sports section. You'd be like, NFL bloopers. Fuck yeah.
Do you want to watch NFL bloopers? Do I?
Do I? I want it so bad.
Well, it's almost, see, I don't know if anyone else has this struggle. I'm having issues now when it's time to sit down and watch a movie. You got Netflix, you got your cable on demand, and you got Amazon Prime.
You got everything.
And I can't ever make a decision
on where to go.
I will go through these movies, and I always felt like
it's overwhelming, too much.
I don't know why it was easier for me in the days of Blockbuster. You go to the store, you walk through, you had new releases, and you had the old ones.
Right.
And I feel like now there's – Netflix doesn't really have new releases. It has sort of the Netflix new releases only.
Right.
And it has all these movies like, well, this is the movie we got for this month, and it's okay. You know, you don't have all the good ones. You sort of have their sort of few good ones and mostly crap ones.
It can be challenging to find. There was a simplicity to the process of at least selecting a movie at Blockbuster.
Because you know what? Every good movie was in Blockbuster. Because that's what they did. All right? There was no, hey, we have the rights to Marvel. Hey, we have the rights to, you know, these good movies.
They didn't discriminate.
They had everything. And so you at least knew when you went to Blockbuster, like, well, the best 1,000 movies ever made are in this building. And if you can't find one of those, it's on you.
Oh.
But I think, you know, sometimes I feel like I go through Netflix. I'm like, not really.
It's tough. Well, so, I mean, it's like it's almost like a menu in at a restaurant. It's way easier to make a decision when there's like the menu is one page rather than like Cheesecake Factory. Where like,
oh,
you're
yeah.
Like, go to page 47 and that's hard.
I have huge paralysis by analysis with my movie choosing, but
you and I were, I was just big on, I watched a lot of sports thing. Like I enjoyed,
you had all the Michael
all
Jordan,
the Michael Jordan so come fly with me, yeah. Playground, Airtime. Like I love those NBA Jam session. To this day, it was the most fun. I mean, these songs were fucking tight.
I mean, and it was just like some guy Tom Hawk. Like, yeah,
and they did a whole. I'll YouTube this afterward. They did a, I think to Don't Sweat the Technique. They did a whole thing on passing, and you had like Mark Jackson, Magic, Stockton, and I was just like, yes. Oh, this is good. Steely Dan reeling in the years. They like look back at Russell and like Havlicek. Oh, yeah. I remember when I was little, I was like,
we watched all of those videos.
It was amazing.
Everything.
Because it was amazing.
Okay, now remind me here. You went, so if you rented a movie, you would have to rewind it, or you would get.
Remember the whole be kind, rewind. I don't know if you got a
fine. Did you get a
fine? I don't think so, but I think
it was, I think you did. Maybe
you
get a fine.
I don't know. Maybe it did. I can't remember.
Rewind.
But I just remember the whole be kind, rewind thing.
Maybe it was depending on the video store.
Maybe I mean,
it's so long ago, I can't really
because
remember.
Did they ever come back? Like, I don't know if I don't know. I think they just like it stayed in its little package.
Well, I think you had an account, and if you were...
You had a Blockbuster card.
If you took the chance, that card was coming up with a fine on it.
They'd so I was swipe. Expecting, like, TSA pre-check to be able to reference something like that. Like, it says here, you've never returned Micro Machines on Sega Genesis. Where is that? Like, I thought it was going to be... But it really was...
And we want to let you into our nation's airports, huh? Faster really? Than normal? I don't know.
You're going to get in the regular line and take off your shoes and all that nonsense. But yeah, you need to do it. It was pretty simple. I mean, I got fingerprint. I mean, right now the FBI's got me dead to rights if they need me. I mean, so many fingerprints were given.
See, I'm borderline a person that considers what my options are for getting off the grid. Like, do I give up my phone? Do I get off?
That's the thing.
At what point do you at what point do you got to do that because the world's going to get to where they have everything on you and somebody could control your life in a second?
See, that's the thing. Two things. Number one, I thought about that a lot. You need to watch El Camino, the Breaking Bad movie.
Okay.
Because there's a little bit of that on like having to get off the grid. I mean, that's what happened with Walt. Spoiler alert. You know, he had to like call the vacuum guy and like get off the grid.
Yeah.
You know, and you think about that. But then there's a lot of people, you know, last week we talked about like, does Bo need to get on Twitter? I got so many tweets from people like, hell yeah, Bo, get on Twitter. I just don't. A part of me looks at you and I see the innocence and the purity of a person that has not been just ridden with the sickness of social media. And I envy you. So there's a part of me that like, I want to be you. So I almost like don't want you to get on Twitter.
Well, I see everybody that's on it. And the only takeaway is that this is horrible because everybody, all they do is complain.
Yes.
And then you feel compelled to constantly be on it. And I don't know that people necessarily enjoy it.
All I do is like promote my pod. And that's it. Like I've just pulled way back on it. Look at... Daryl Morey started an international incident with a tweet.
He tweeted something and China won't do business with the NBA anymore. That's how the world works?
So
wait
like,
a minute. That's how the world
like,
works.
Man, it's just Twitter. It's like, well, it's...
That's
like,
how the world works?
That's how the world works now.
It's beyond my comprehension.
Yeah. So I was thinking about it as like every day, like more and more tweets would come in and be like, yeah, get Bo on Twitter. I'm like, I look at you as my best friend. I can see that. I can see the innocence. I look at you and I see who I was pre Twitter and social media, and I just don't want you to do it.
You know, I
do
would
you want
like
some slapstick being like, "Hey, you're an idiot, rude." Do you want that in your life?
Well,
that's
I mean,
what it's
going to be. It happens from time to time in reality, so like that means it would happen more if it was on there. So, I don't know. I mean, I I see my wife's Instagram, and it's nice because there's pictures. So I kind of like the idea of that.
I don't mind. Instagram's not as volatile.
It's just pictures. Yeah. It's kind of great. Yeah. But I just see Twitter, and it's like everyone's like, all right, I'd like to I'm going to go into the a-hole mode here for about an hour, and I'm going to do some tweeting. All right. Who's up first? Okay. Oh, yeah. That's a nice comment. Guess what? Like, you're a son of a...
You know what's crazy? No. What's crazy is when you get someone, you know, I'll get... Every once in a while, you get, you know, someone that just like comes in, just like eviscerates your soul on Twitter. And usually when you click on their profile and look at their previous tweets, Bo, it is like whoever this person is, they are sitting there and just be, you know,
maybe it's the
just
maybe that's their therapy. It's like, all right, I'm the nicest guy in the world. My name is Clark Manyweather, and I'm very nice to everyone. And then he's just like, but my therapist recommended that for an hour a day, every single day of the week, I get in touch with my anger, and so I find people that I have hostilities against, and let's just say, I swear at their asses all day. Yeah!
No, but honestly, you wonder if there's some people that just like, that's how they like release their, I mean, some people work out, some people read, some people, whatever, you know,
just
like
get angry whatever, on get angry,
some people like
by typing,
I guess that's what it is, but it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Ah. I don't know. We're TBD on you joining Twitter. Cause part of me feels like I need to utilize my presidential veto power. That's what people are talking about at this Bo on Twitter.
Oh, man.
I might have to veto it, dog. I might have to veto it. Okay.
What were we talking
time about? Check. 12 minutes into the pod. We haven't even talked about the game. Do you want to do it?
Talk about Nebraska football?
I guess.
I'm good. No. This I actually do. Me and you, like, it's been such a habit of our life that after every Nebraska football game, we would do this. This for a decade, we've done this, where we just call each other and talk about Nebraska football. So
yes.
The fact that we can't right after the game.
Yeah, last night was hard.
It was hard, because especially when we lose, I think that's when we have a lot to say.
I need to have my therapy.
I have a lot of thoughts. I've been keeping them to myself.
Okay, be ready to unleash them?
Yeah, my wife was trying to console me last night, but I was...
Is there anything worse than when, like, someone you don't want to, like, it's going to be okay. They were going to fight still.
And you just, like, you appreciate... I said, yeah, I appreciate you trying, but, like, I know it's a game, and I'm almost mad that I'm mad about a game. So, like, you know.
Pointing out that it's just a game does not make me go, oh, yeah.
Like, I know this is crazy that I'm this mad, but I am this mad. Okay. So,
we ready to do this?
I'm ready. Yep.
All right. I mean, we'll start with this. Saturday night, to me, was by far the most alarming, concerning thing that has happened in the, what is it now, 19 games that Frost has taken over. Like, that Saturday night was way worse, 10,000 times worse than the Ohio State blowout. Because it kind of feel like every bad moment or loss so far in the Frost era could kind of be explained or rationalized to a certain degree. Like, this is maybe the first loss that I can't really even begin to try to explain this. Because it's important to keep this in mind when you are assessing what happened in Minneapolis. The Minnesota team that absolutely kicked Nebraska's teeth in, ran for 322 yards, got up 34-0. That same Minnesota team struggled big time in the non-con last month with South Dakota State, Fresno State, and Georgia Southern. They had to have, I was reading a Mitch Sherman story. In all three of those games, they were one in the last 90 seconds of the game in regulation or overtime. Minnesota rushed for 2.6 yards per carry or yards per attempt against those teams. Against Nebraska, they ran for 322 yards. They ran for 9.6 yards per attempt in the first half. Like, so I guess just to me last night, and this is where we talk about Twitter and like save your outrage. Like when people get outraged after like the South Alabama win or the North, it's like save your outrage for like real. Like last night was to me the first legit code red outrageous thing I've seen, because last night, Bo, was not about skill or talent. It was about something else, and we're going to get into whatever that else was. But yeah. I don't know how you – like, that's how – last night was the first, like, whoa moment.
Yeah. You know, it was – it was the – maybe the worst time that they could have possibly played what looked to me like their letdown game. The game that they –
they look like they had minimal interest in being out there to me.
Yeah, they had minimal. I mean, I don't know that they didn't necessarily lack effort as much as they lacked what to me they lacked toughness.
Yeah,
they lacked toughness and they lacked.
That's interesting. Do you think there's a difference? Because like I think there may be.
Yeah, effort and toughness are a little bit. They're a little different. I think they're different. And to me, they weren't tough and they weren't disciplined. And usually most teams, not just Nebraska, but for sure Nebraska, but most teams have one game a year that is their their letdown game where you don't show up. I mean, I think against Ohio State, I think they showed up and tried to play. Just they couldn't win that game, right?
And again, you can explain that away because
this is their game that, for whatever reason, I don't think their hearts weren't in it. They weren't ready for a fight, and Minnesota was ready to fight in the cold.
Yeah,
like in the muck, they wanted to be physical and they wanted to play. And I just didn't see it out of our guys.
Yeah, I think that was one of the first things that jumped out at me was Nebraska looked. They looked cold, and they looked soft to me. Like you've been. Yeah. I've played in cold weather. You've played in cold weather. I'm sure you've. There are sometimes when you're competing against someone in the cold where it looks like they would give anything to just go hit the hot shower and get a blanket.
Oh, God.
And to me, everybody on the field for Nebraska against Minnesota looked like they just all they wanted to do was get a warm shower and a blankie. That's what they looked like.
Oh, I mean, it was like. It's amazing how much that's exactly how I saw it too, where.
They didn't want any part of that last night.
So I always took it as if I'm from Nebraska, which is a cold weather state. I was played during the Big 12 era, and when you got the Texas teams up in the state, like I always felt like, man, here's our chance to have an advantage. It's cold. The fast guys, which they usually have more of, are a little less fast and a little less apt at.
Yes.
Plane explode. They're out of their game, and I always felt like I could play the game I always played. That was always my take. But now we're playing against Minnesota. It's a colder state than us, and to me, they look like that was the case, and we were the warm weather team.
Yes.
That's how it looked like, oh, they're comfortable in this. They're playing physical, and you know they're tackling, and we can't block, and we can't tackle. In that weather.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like.
Yes. And so how much was – because one of the talking points in the media all week was that – I think it might have been Ryan Held or Troy Walters. Some people were talking about they didn't do anything to prepare for the cold. They're like, listen, it's a mindset.
I think they went out on Friday when it's cold out and they practiced.
Apparently P.J. Fleck and those guys, they did a lot. Like they did – they made the receivers like put their hands in cold – like.
Yeah,
the cold tub, and then have to catch. Like they apparently did a lot. And Fleck, even after the game, made a comment about that, of saying that we worked hard. I'm paraphrasing here. We worked hard to get ready for the weather. He goes, and I heard some quote that they didn't, and I thought it kind of showed. Do you? I guess the first. I mean, and again, a lot of it goes to a mentality of toughness. I mean, to me, it's like it's cold.
It's cold. Like, I think
if you can't beat the cold, I mean, come on.
You know how much you can practice it is one thing, but. I don't mind doing stuff to simulate it, whether it works or not. I think it's just – it's one more thing that is – you try to give yourself any mental edge you can. So
right.
I like doing stuff like whatever Fleck was doing. It seems outrageous. I like doing that type of stuff. Not that it even helps, but it just makes you
feel
it gives your mind when you're out there, you're the one thing you have is the mental edge to go, these guys don't want to be out here. Yeah. And to me, whether that was the case or not, it looked like that was the case that, for Minnesota versus Nebraska.
I agree. And so I wanted to start with that. I'm glad you saw the same thing. That was the first thing that jumped out at me in the first quarter was like, oh my God, those guys look cold. You know, like their body, everybody looked cold and just soft. And again, like if you would have presented any of those guys like, hey, there's one of those showers that it's just steam is just, I mean, it's so hot.
Hot cocoa.
I got a blanket. That is
We put the towel in the dryer. We put the towel in the dryer, and then there's hot cocoa. So we're going to wrap you in the warm towel. So, I'll take it.
If you would have presented any of them, they'd have been like, you got
yourself a damn deal. Make it hot.
Not only you got your deal, but I appreciate you. So,
and then the stewardess is going to walk around with one of those warm little roll-out hot towels you can put on your face.
Just sit there. You can just get a blanket. The best blankets. I know the best.
I got a blanket guy.
I make deals. He makes deals. Everyone's making a blanket deal. I got the best one. But so that was the first thing that jumped to me. The other thing I want to ask you about was how hard is it? Because I don't know this. Some people are talking about they needed they've gone seven straight weeks without a bye. How hard is that? Because that's the other thing. There is an element of like you have the bye week and you wonder how many of those guys are like, fuck, man, I just.
Well, in this coaching staff, I don't think they've had a bye week in 3 years or something. Because
think about last year. That's a good point. So last year at Central Florida, they had a couple of the hurricane canceled a few games, which led to I don't think they had a bye. Then last year because of the weather, did they go 12 straight weeks?
Yeah, no byes last year because they had one bye last year, and then
they played Bethune-Cookman.
Yeah,
is that what it was. Yeah. And then this year, so it's like they just look like a team that in every way, whether it's the weather or whatever, they looked like a team that needed a break.
It is. They are a team that needs a break. Bad one to get healthy. Their best players are all hurt.
Yeah.
That's one, but two, it's really disappointing when you look at the landscape. And we talked about this last week. The setup we had for the rest of this year, what a missed opportunity!
No doubt,
to win this Big Ten West game and set yourself up to be in it for the rest of the year and be in a great spot to have that chance at a Big Ten West title. And against a team you beat last year to not play better than that, it's just disappointing.
Yeah.
Because they had a lot in front of them still. They actually still are alive, which is good. But the opportunity was this week, and they had no instinct to take that.
It's funny, and this probably makes it sounds silly to even say this out loud, but it went from last night feeling like heading into the game, Nebraska was going to potentially be in the West Division race, to now it kind of feels like it's going to be a grind to get to a bowl. And we'll get more into that, shelve that, and we'll get more into that at the end. What I want to talk about the defense for a second, because I told you before when I wanted you to explain what happened. But can I start with this real quick? And I know you aren't on Twitter, so you maybe don't see this, but it is, I shouldn't say it's puzzling because I understand it. I mean, I don't agree with it, but I understand it. So the defense was bad last night. And everybody knows that.
Yeah.
But it is amazing to me how much quicker Husker fans are ready to pounce and crush the defense more than they are ever to criticize the offense. That's all back to, I mean, I've explained this before. It's like Frost is associated with the offense. People don't want to criticize the offense. I think there was a lot of people in their mind, for whatever reasons, had their reservations about Eric Chenander. It's just weird to me how people are like ready to crush the defense, and then but yet no one really wants to crush the offense. It's like everyone does realize that if the defense has won pretty much three games for them this year, two. I mean, like South Alabama, Northwestern for sure. Like they,
yeah.
they have the defense was great last night, but this defense has kind of carried the team. So I guess just that's the first thing. It's always interesting to me how people are ready to crush the defense and they're real slow to crush the offense.
I think just Nebraska, our state mentality has always, I think, been more
on that side.
Play good defense is sort of what we're known for, and I think we're a run the ball, control the clock. I mean, I think they expect less in terms of scoring than they do.
Yeah, you probably
they
maybe that's what it is.
More
yeah.
out of the defense. I think that's part of why they.
I just say I don't know. To me, it's just like everybody's like, oh man, the defense. It's like, well, you do. I mean, the defense has carried.
Yeah,
carried. This team so far. So, yeah, pardon me for not wanting to kill them for having one clunker yeah. when the offense has been a clunker for really the lion's share of the entire season. But with all that said, Mr. Former All Big 12 linebacker and NFL draft pick in the New England Patriots, you need to explain it to me. What was happening? Because it looked like it wasn't like Minnesota was doing anything that struck me as super complex or anything like that. What the hell happened? For all of a sudden, a Minnesota rushing attack that hasn't been great. Again, I gave you the numbers against their non-con opponents. To they look like they could. They were again. They were averaging 9.6 yards per carry in the first half. What was happening?
So, like I said, I watch. I always watch it on when I'm at home. I do a little tape delay. It's where you start the game about 30-40 minutes late. Watch commercial free, but the nice part is you kind of have a little bit more freedom to rewind.
Yeah.
So I'll rewind after a play that doesn't go well, and I want to see what's going. That's just sort of like a habit. As I want to see, okay, what happened there, and it basically came down to two things. One, it was like we didn't tackle well, right? So everybody was coming up and either tackling not physical enough and getting dragged and. Getting ran through, or they were hitting and not wrapping.
Okay.
Two problems. It was just, in general, the tackling was
bad. Yeah.
Very bad. But there was nothing they did schematically, I think, that was like, wow, that's really tricky. It was just, I kept seeing their guys reach our guys in the trenches. So they were, these zones and these running, they'd run to the edge and they were getting... our guys, they were hooking them and they kept pretty consistently throughout the game, basically just blocking them how they want. Like when you block a scheme, even if we know it's coming, but they block it up, And so that was a combination of just, we couldn't tackle in the cold. And it's a pretty simple explanation because there wasn't a lot to it. I mean, it was just simply like they executed and we couldn't stop it.
That's just crazy when, especially again, considering like, okay, Michigan last year, it's like Nebraska doesn't have those kinds of players. Ohio State this year, it's like Nebraska doesn't have that. Like you could chalk it up to the talent thing. It's just, it's scary that Minnesota, a team that is not necessarily, now they're big guys, but it's not like they've been.
They grow them big. I mean,
yeah, big old boys.
My dad's side of the family, they're all Minnesotans.
Yeah, they're big.
I've
yeah.
got a couple of cousins that played for Minnesota, and they're big people. So right. The one thing is like they're never short on large human beings in Minnesota. So they always have huge linemen, huge tight ends.
Yes.
It seems like, but like those guys that they had, they all were blocking physical. You could see they were hung. Their tight ends, I was watching those tight ends block, and they were physical. They were digging our guys out on those sort of zone fallback plays. And
it sounds like it's one of those games where it's like there's sometimes what someone does isn't complicated. It's just about whether or not you're going to be up for the fight.
Yeah, it was basically – to me, the game, the more I think about it, it was more like the Northwestern game. It was almost identical. Like we were super conservative in offense. We didn't turn the ball over. They didn't turn the ball over. The difference was Minnesota's line was a little bit better and they just blocked us. They blocked us a lot better. And their running backs were better and they were physical. They ran through all of our tackles. And so to say we like, there's much more to it than that. That's what's disheartening to me was it was pretty straightforward. Like, they blocked. They were getting our guys.
How were you ever? because I'm trying to think of all your years at Nebraska. Did you ever have a year where you, when you were on defense, you knew your offense was just not very good?
2004 was a horrible year for offense. That was Callahan's first year.
Oh, okay, so you had Joe Daly.
And we didn't have anybody to play receiver, though. So it was...
Right. That was the definition of you had a team that was recruited to run a certain style, and all of a sudden it's a total
flip.
I was like, Joe. Joe was a nice guy.
Nice guy. But, but you know, like that was the year we lost to Texas Tech, but that game wasn't a blowout until the fourth quarter when we turned it over like five straight times inside. And like, you know, then it goes from 30 to 70.
It balloons.
But like we had all these defensive talent, right?
Because it is amazing. Because I'm trying to get at the mentality and does it wear on you defensively when you're just going to get no help right now?
No question. And we've talked about this a little before where it's hard to play defense when you know the offense isn't when the offense is scoring, it takes pressure off the defense. And it puts more pressure on the other offense, right? They got to keep scoring. So instead, like, they got a lead and we're not moving the ball. And, like, they can just keep taking chances. And, like, they have all the confidence in the world and we have none.
Right.
So it's for sure plays against you on defense where if your offense is – it's hard to go out there over and over and over, like – when you're just constantly on the field going, like, how many times do we got to stop them?
Well, because I thought last night was the first time that I thought it looked like it looked like for the first time the defense kind of quits a strong word, but it looked like they let the dam broke and they were like, fuck it to a certain extent. And I think a part of that is like when you know you're not getting any support for week after week after week, it can be tempting to just be like, I mean, it can just wear on you.
It does. And I mean, you want people to be competitors and play no matter what. And that's the ultimate what you want. But it is like you're down 21-0 and then your offense goes three and out, and you're just like, and then you're just kind of like.
That's what it felt like.
It gets tough. It gets tough and you can feel it. Now, so to kind of play on that, you're asking about, I thought this was telling. You're asking about, well, what happened? And Frost said this at the post game. Okay, he says, we knew what run plays they were going to run. They ran them and they worked. He says, right now we're having to pick and choose run plays on our side and to try to scheme too much instead of just winning up front. Like being able to rely on a run.
Yeah.
So that was telling to me, because he put it so simply, like they ran what
they
we
did
practiced,
what they were going to do. Yeah.
And they just did it though.
Right.
So we couldn't stop them doing what we knew they were going to do. So that just tells me like, well, they just won the physical battle. And that's a bad feeling as a team where you go, I thought we were right there with them physically. I thought we would be. And we didn't either show up or we're not there.
Because
one of the two.
One of the things there are what I love. One of the great things about football is there's like some things. There are things that can happen in the game that are demoralizing that add up. And how many times last night did the O-line come push the pile forward?
Every time.
And those things, like the crowd reacts to it, everyone, it's demoralizing for the defense and it pumps energy into you offensively. Because there's something, there is, at the end of the day, you can just strip football down to the primitive aspect of like, I am here, you're here, I'm going to move you over here. And that just like a little, but that goes back to the mentality of like, they were ready to fight. And Nebraska wasn't ready to fight.
Our piles never moved. Theirs always did. We missed a lot of tackles at the 1 and 2 yard mark, and they'd get 8 or 9 then. And it never happened. They always, when they hit us to the line, we stopped.
Right.
So that, like I said, those things add up over the course of a game where, like, third quarter, you're just like, it's over. You just got beat.
Because
that's what getting beat is.
That's what, because there was something so startling about last night's defensive performance. And I think a lot of it goes back to they feel worn out having to shoulder so much of the load of trying to win when you have an offense that is just giving you nothing. Another nugget from I think it was Mitch Sherman's piece, like on the offensive struggles. Nebraska has scored one touchdown in each of the last three games. That's the first time that has happened in the regular season since 1967. Like this is a stretch of inept offense that is even like worse than, like, I'm looking at, remember how bad the 2009 offense was? Even they didn't have a stretch of three games quite like this. Like, I don't think people understand how horrible Nebraska's offense is right now.
Well, it's horrible. Well, I think we can all feel it when, like, every single possession we're on offense, I'm like, oh my God.
Just
like,
get a first down.
Can we get a first down? Where, you know, most teams, I don't think, feel this way.
No. And so I think the other thing that you saw last night was the offensive issues are beyond just the quarterback. Vedrill was fine. I thought there were times where Vedrill actually ran a little harder than Martinez in certain spots. But I think you could tell last night that, like, Vedrill isn't the – like, plugging in Vedrill doesn't all of a sudden make the offense click or something like that.
I think maybe that game maybe solidified Martinez by not playing, because I think it showed us – where everybody else is at when he's not in there. Because let me just tell you something. The offense looked worse with him out of there. I'm going to give Vedrill credit. I thought Vedrill did a good job. He did not turn the ball over. Yeah. He ran tough.
He was fine. I mean, that's all you could say.
Like, and that's all I was – that's all I'd ask out of him. And like I said, it was a similar offensive game as we played against Northwestern. Except for the defense just played a lot better.
Yes.
And kept us in it. It was a, you know, we win, we eke one out against Northwestern, right? But we can't get any points against Minnesota. I mean, we could not score.
It felt like that game could have gone on for another eight quarters and Nebraska wasn't going to score.
And that
like
garbage time, that garbage time touchdown, like I don't even consider that.
To me, they got shut out last night.
Yeah, that was a shutout game. Like, Minnesota was already, they were already in the locker room celebrating. That
yes.
One. So I don't want to say that, well, now that they got it clicking at the end of the game, like, that doesn't count to me because the other team checks out.
Yeah. Nebraska now leads the Big Ten in sacks given up.
That's a big
problem.
That to me is the story. If you're going to say, what's the story of the offense that you learned? I mean, we've been talking about receivers these first 5 weeks. Man, we got to find somebody, which is that nothing has changed there. The offensive line, they got put in the spotlight this week because Martinez is out. So Vedrill's in, and Vedrill did his job.
Yeah.
Vedrill went in there and did his job for a week as a backup quarterback who's having his first start. He did everything he was supposed to do. Took care of the ball. He ran tough when they asked him to. He tried to make good decisions in the passing game, But what you found out was this line, they are not ready to beat anybody. Because you can't, like, if you can't drop back and throw a pass, you know, without getting sacked half the time.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
It's such a good point, though. It's funny, I didn't even think about that. Like, whenever there is a backup quarterback that's going to start a game, usually it's incumbent, everybody, you know, like, everyone knows, like, you know, everybody's got to step, you know, the running backs know they got to do a little better. Receivers got to work a little harder to get open. O-line's got to work. Like, it's this thing that clicks, and it's pretty evident that in came Vedrill, and those guys couldn't raise their game at all. And in fact, Martinez covers up for a lot of shit, and they look pretty shaky.
Yeah, it just...
But yeah, I mean, you're not going to win any. I mean, when I'd like to see a stat on at the end of a season, whoever is dead last in the conference in sacks given up, where they finish record-wise in the con- like probably not good. Your quarterback gets sacked a lot. That's a problem.
It's just it, then all of a sudden we it's to the point where we don't feel we can just run the plays we want to run because there's no trust. Where
right.
I mean, I just can't remember the last time we dropped back and had too much time where he just sit and look. And it's just, I think that part is the biggest takeaway that I took from this game was in the trenches, we are a long ways away. And until we're good there, we can never be good.
When I was driving home last night, I clicked on Bigger Double Reaction, and there's a caller that actually had a great line that's so true along those lines. You know, there's people say, like, offense wins games, defense wins championships. You know that cliche. But really, it's offense wins games, trenches win championships.
Yeah.
Like, basically, you can't win anything of substance in football if you aren't good in the trenches. And right now, it feels like, especially in the offensive side of the ball, they got a long way to go there.
Yes.
And so, I mean, the other thing, and I threw this at you, I wish because your reaction was, I wish I wouldn't have, this is why you saved for the pod. But I mean, again, the thing that's remarkable is I pulled up last year's box score for Nebraska against Minnesota. So largely the same cast of characters. Nebraska hung 53 points on Minnesota. Martinez was 25 of 29, 276 yards and 3 touchdowns. Nebraska had not one, not two, but 3 different 100-yard rushers. Ozigbo went for 152. Martinez went for 125. And Maurice Washington went for 109. Stanley Morgan had 10 receptions for 163 yards and 2 touchdowns. J.D. Spielman had 8 catches for 77 yards and a touchdown. That's what happened last year against this Minnesota team. Fast forward a year later, Nebraska basically gets shut out and couldn't even move the ball at all. And so you're just trying to, like, did Tanner Farmer, Gerald Foster, Divine Ozigbo, and Stanley Morgan make that big of a difference?
You know, if you just name those guys, I don't think you actually think, man, those guys are all game changers.
Because none of them got drafted.
We could use them all, though, right now, is what you find out is, you know, 5 guys do make a difference. But, man, I don't have a good answer for you on how we can be 53 points to basically shut out with nearly the same team.
That's the thing that I think is, you know, when you talk about concerns and all those things, the regression and the ineptness of the offense is really startling. Like, where this, again, this is, this offense, like, stop and smell the roses for a second.
Yeah.
South Alabama, horrible. Horrible. Colorado, they were okay to me. I don't think they were great. They were okay. Illinois, they ended up having a lot of yards, and they were pretty solid against Illinois. Northern Illinois, they were okay. Ohio State, awful. Northwestern, awful. Minnesota, awful. Like, and this is supposed to be the headliner for the, like, this was, like, again, this defense isn't built like Wisconsin and Michigan State and all this stuff to, like, they're not really this program's not meant for the defense to have to carry the team.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not. And so it's the regression of the offense is, like, startling. I mean, I bet right now if we pulled up and watched the Minnesota game from last year, it'd be like, what the hell is this?
It's hard to explain that one. This year has been hard to explain on a lot of levels.
Yeah.
Because I do, in all sincerity, think we are improving. I totally believe we have been improving since the day Frost got here. But I just can't explain sort of like some of the things that go on. Like,
yeah.
I really can't. So, that's probably a weird statement to make.
No, I know what you're saying.
But I believe it. I try to look at things with, you know, with both eyes open and see what's going on. And this is one of those I just go. I mean, so here's one that I went looking. I'm just started looking at. I go, we just don't look like we got the horses right now. So I went and I started digging through the last 5 years of our recruiting classes. And I started looking through and I go, okay, that guy actually plays that guy. Who's this guy? That guy's not on the team, right? And you go mm-hmm. through. And from 2015 to 2019, I wrote down from each year a total of, let's see, 15. There was about 29 guys that I call guys that play, right? So these are starters and rotation guys that, you know, they might be a couple D linemen, a couple sure. DBs, a couple receivers come in from the years. And so I kind of marked them by year. So in the 2015 year, there's five guys from that class that actually are playing. In the 2016, there's 10. From the 2017 class, there's 2. From the 2018 class, Frost's first year, there's 8. And the 2019, all the young guys this year, plus transfers, there's 4. So looking at that, the big thing that stands out is that 2017 year, Riley's last year.
Right.
2 guys. And these would be juniors this year.
Right. That's a good point.
Like, juniors this year, are the guys we got that you nothing.
Would... Right.
We got nothing out of this 2017. And so then I went down and said, well, how many of these guys that are playing are actually guys that would play elsewhere? And out of each of those numbers, there's less, right? So there might be 3 from 2015, 6, 5, 3. How many of these guys are NFL guys from all those? And there's about 2, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, or 2. You know, so it's amazing that I think especially that 2017 class.
Yeah, stands out. I mean, that's a startling.
That stands. I mean, you wish that.
Because there's a reality to the roster that is pretty much kind of summarized there.
Yeah. So I mean, the 2017 and 2016 classes. I mean, 2016 there's more guys that are quote unquote playing, but I mean the amount of guys that are difference makers from the 15, 16, and 17. It's like so. Like I don't want to put this all on just Riley's recruiting classes, because Frost 2018 class, I mean, it was thrown together. It's never going to be a good class. But even that, he's got 8 guys from the 2018 class, so redshirt freshman playing versus the 2017's got 2, and basically none of them are guys that are like going to be pros or big time. So that's leaving the cupboard bare.
I think one of the things that could be happening as you're saying all that is it almost feels like the program now is paying for all of the sins of the past
15 years.
It's all coming to. It's almost like that. You know, everybody maybe has that buddy that, you know, is like a smoker, drinker, lives hard, and it's like they they get away with it, they get away with it, they get away with it, and then all of a sudden they turn 40 or something like that, and all of a sudden all those years of not taking care of yourself and smoke, all this stuff, all of a sudden all catches up to you. And all of a sudden now, in 1 year, you're paying for the sins of what happened for the past 10 years. And while you may be going, well, I'm not doing anything, this year I feel like why is it happening this year? It's like, well, it's not just about now, it's what's been happening in the past.
Yeah.
And you think about how it is hard to endure the amount of changes. Nebraska's had 3 different strength coaches, 3 different head coaches. They've had 4 different defensive coordinators. They've had there has been constant
change.
And it feels like, and listen, you might be listening right now and be like, oh, here come the excuses. Okay. I mean, if you want to, you know, if no, you want to play that game, that's fine.
I'm trying to understand. That's my whole thing. I'm trying to figure it out.
Here's the thing. We can do the whole thing of turning on the mics and just bitch. Yeah. You know, we can just bitch and complain and all that stuff. But we can also try to explain what's happening. Well, not saying I got the answers. But
no,
like,
and I don't either. I started looking at, because I'd never, you know, I don't really look at the recruiting stuff, but I went through and I looked at that. Because the first thing that really stood out to me is that 2017 class. I went, there's nobody on the team from that class. And they go, these should be the guys that are, you know, really start, like when you're a redshirt sophomore or a true junior,
that should be the core of your team.
You are playing, like you are contributing. Like yeah. You look at Ohio State, a lot of their rosters is juniors and seniors, right. A lot of juniors. And like, you know, we've got a lot of young guys playing, and I think two things happen with young guys. Like they can't do as much. They make more mistakes and they get hurt a lot. It's just part of being young. You're not ready for physical football usually against guys that are older right. And strong. Because when you get to that age, you get to become a senior. All of a sudden, everybody's not as big and strong and fast as they used to be.
Right.
And not as much change. It's just you got older and then people get younger. It's great. I remember feeling when I was a sophomore, I was like, man, it was like some games you just felt like, whew. It was hard. It was hard to hold up in there. And by the time you were a senior, you were like,
"Oh, I think
you always felt just like so much more." Like
it's not even. You ask anybody. I think about the handful of games that I got thrown out there when I was a freshman or sophomore playing college basketball,
big time college basketball for Kansas. Yeah,
and then I think about how I felt when I was on the floor when I was a junior and a senior, especially as a senior, and it's like it's not even comparable.
Yeah,
and. Now imagine that being like your entire roster of contributors. Some of those guys are, you know, it's just and so I don't know. I mean, it's you try to because there is an element of watching the game last night. You're like, how is this happening? And so I think it's a culmination of a lot. I think it's what we're talking about. How it kind of feels like, unfortunately, like at some point, like all the stuff catches up to you. It feels like unfortunately everything's coming to a head under this staff. And then there's that explains a broader thing of it. Then there's the element of the offensive struggles that are real that impact the defense's psyche, where for the first time last night, the defense just said, fuck it. And the levee broke.
Yeah.
And I mean, because I don't know, the other thing, you bring up some of these younger players, and you know, you and I said we want to talk about this. We got to talk about Maurice Washington for a second because, you know, I'm talking about all the things I love about football. One of the great things about football, too, is you can't fake it and you can't hide, especially at certain positions. Football has a way. It's why all-star games don't work in football because you can't – football's not a sport.
Can't go through the motions.
You can't go through the motions. You can't play half-hearted. You can't. And there is an element, just observing. I don't know this to be true because I'm not around Maurice Washington every day. Maurice Washington looks like a guy that isn't all in right now. He's not, and running back is one of those positions, especially in a night like that, like last night in Minneapolis, where it's 30 and cold and snowy. It's like, if you don't really want to be there, it's going to show. And it looks like it's been about three games now where Maurice Washington looks like he doesn't want to be there.
Yeah,
and they need him.
And I don't know if he's hurt. Maybe he's still hurt. Or maybe, you know, he's a guy, like I said, he's a young guy that they've asked to play that physically doesn't really look like he's ready to play to me. Like, he's fast. Like, physically, you get him in space, he looks great. But to be a running back and ask him to run through the tackles, like, if you physically aren't capable of doing that, like, you shouldn't have to be doing that. Or they shouldn't play it because
he's not ready to be an every down
he doesn't,
back in I mean, the Big Ten.
He's not running through contact at all. He's not running aggressively through the line. And it shows. And even to start the year, he was running harder than this. And I'm not sure what that is.
Yeah, but I don't know.
He's tiptoeing around. And I like I said, I don't know what's going on with him. But I just know this, that's not going to work.
No.
That's not going to work. To run like that.
If he's hurt, that's one thing. Yeah, if he's not, and then it's like...
You don't want to say anything until you know what's going on with the kid. But at the same time, you know, there's something wrong there. He's not playing the way he needs to play. And
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. Because I think, in my mind, you know, there's not a whole lot else to go to right now. That's why he's playing, is because it's him and Mills are the only two guys. Wandale's hurt. So, yeah, I think he has to play right now, but that's a bad place to be, is when you're a coach and you go, we have to play somebody.
Yeah. We got no choice.
Or not, and you are the best player right now.
Well, and I think there are a lot of things, a lot of instances where that's maybe the case with this coach being a little bit hand tied with, they are in between a rock and a hard place with their depth chart.
I don't know that we have a depth chart. I mean, we're, it's one,
like,
deep.
So I hear a lot of people that, you know, scream about, like, well, you know, if this guy's not getting it done, you got to put in someone else. It's like, well, who? Again, we don't see practice. And I've always said that I give coaches usually the benefit of the doubt on who's at least playing.
No doubt.
And so you sit there and be like, you got to pull Juergens. You got to pull this guy. You got to pull. But, well, I mean, oh, yeah, if you have in a perfect world with options and depth, yeah. But I don't know if that's the case right now.
No, we don't have any depth, and that's become, and that gets more clear every game too. And so I guess the takeaway is, to me, is like, you know, I started talking about this sort of recruiting gap where we missed for, you know, 3-4 years we've missed. I think this 2019 class, that our freshman this year, Wandale's class, I do think there's a lot of more potential in that class. There's a few big linemen. Like, mm-hmm. There's some big guys that, you know, in 3 years, those guys will probably be ready. A couple of good, the linebacker out of Omaha, you know, he's got a lot of talent. And, you know, the Reimers kid, the walk-on, like, you know, these guys, give them a couple years. I think there's some good talent there. I think the problem is, like I said, the 17, 16, 15 classes, those are supposed to be the ones that are winning this year and next year. So I think the realization that came to me is, when I look at that, is like, oh, it's sort of this, you know, the good players from the 18 class that made it, you know, the Martinez's and the, you know, Mo Washington would be considered one of them if, you know, if he hits the weights and
gets it going a little bit.
You know, gets it, but it's really this 19. So it's probably, like, say, it's a full 2 years before
I know that.
I think that we're going to be a competitive football.
I think that's
team.
One of the, and it is what it is. And you can get mad at it if you want to, but it is what it is. I think one of the takeaways from this year that is too bad and it's frustrating is that Nebraska's at least a year away.
Full year.
I'm talking all of next year.
Yeah.
And that is something I think there were a lot of people that I don't think a lot of people thought Nebraska. I really think because we talked about this in August, where I think when it came right down to it, a lot of Husker fans didn't expect Nebraska to win the West and go to the Big Ten championship game. But I think one thing that every Husker fan hoped to have happen this year was the year could come to an end and they could see it. And see that it's coming next year. Yeah. And I'm telling you right now, unless there is a massive, unbelievable transformation, I'm going to have a hard time feeling like in 2 months, Bo, if we're sitting here saying, next year, bro, look out.
Let me just tell you something. Next year is going to be no different because, Nick, we don't have any different players. Like, there's going to be really no freshmen that are going to come in. I mean, there's how many Wandales do you expect every year?
You get one every maybe 4 or 5 years.
One
maybe.
Every couple years. So it's going to be the same guys. So it's really the young guys in 2018 and 19 that we can develop that might turn into something, plus new guys that we get. So, you know, that's hard. And I'll say that I didn't know that we were as – I didn't know what we were maybe when Frost – like, I guess I thought this would probably go a little bit faster just because
– I think we all did.
I know you don't know what you got till you see what you got, and I think we're finally seeing what we have, and we go, oh, we thought these guys were maybe a more elite players than they were, and these are more just guys, you know? And so that's a little hard – that's a little hard sometimes to stomach when I think we all bought into expectations. You know, we go down the roster, like, oh, good, 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 great, great, all Big 12, all Big 12, all Big 10, all Big 10. You know, like, you do that.
Yeah.
And then you realize, like, oh, no, you have no context for that. You just say it because you, over the summer, decided this guy was great in the weight room or something. Like,
because
Well, like, until you're good on the field one year, you can't count a guy in.
And I still think it's hard to rid people of what we all grew up thinking. Meaning, we're all used to, if you're the starting running back at Nebraska,
means you're pretty good.
It means you're like going to go to the NFL probably and be like pretty damn good. And if you're the starting defensive end at Nebraska, like, you're pretty good. And the reality is, like, a lot of that's shifted. Even one thing that I think has shifted is, like, I think for a lot of people, in their minds, like last night, I bet there are a lot of teams that now see Nebraska on their schedule and go, oh, that's a get right game. And that is like hurts to even say. Where I guarantee you last night, to a certain extent, Minnesota took the field last night being like, you know, fucking kill this.
Well, do you know what we still get? Here's the problem is people are not scared of us, but it's still an important game because our name's big enough.
Right.
So it's like, so let's say USC stinks.
Yes.
Even though you're not scared of USC, guess what you usually want to do?
Yeah, you want to beat USC.
Beat them bad. More right. than you care about beating Oregon State or beating Washington State. Like, you want to – so teams, I swear, and maybe I'm wrong and maybe I'm biased, but teams always give us their best, even when we're not good. And I'm just like, you know, like, why does Maryland play Ohio State closer than us? Like, I can't explain it. But I swear Ohio State brings it. Like, I watched them the next week when they played Michigan State, and they're dropping balls, and they're missing plays, and Michigan State's in the game. And I'm going, well, why don't they do that against us? And I can't explain it. Yeah. Teams just – they just have been waiting 30 or 40 years to just get at us, and I'm telling you what, they never miss an opportunity to come at the Huskers.
Couple of things as we kind of wrap this up. So I have no idea because, I mean, again, I would be the same way if I were Frost on, like, I would assume – I mean, I think if Martinez made the trip and he's not on, like, crutches or there's not, like, you hope another – he's now going to have 2 full weeks. You would think he's probably going to play.
Yep.
Wandale, same thing. It looked like if you saw his ankle, it looked like he sprained it on the inside. And he was on the sidelines, not in crutches, just standing there. So I got to think it's probably just –
he was in a boot.
Was he in a boot?
Yep.
So,
which means that's precautionary, but as long as he didn't break anything. I mean, I've had a really bad sprained ankle.
So have I.
And those things can take a long – so his didn't look like it went, you know, all the way around or something. But if it's minor, he might be 2-3 weeks. If it's a real sprain, he could be 6-8 weeks minimum.
So hopefully he's okay because the reality is, I mean, if you had to say the two most important guys on offense – are Martinez and Wandale Robinson.
That's bad.
And the offense is already not good with those guys. Now, take those guys out of there, it's like, oh boy, that's a little scary.
Yep.
Real quick, and this, I don't even know if you care about this because I feel like it's already passed, but I want to talk about this for a second. What was kind of frustrating, and it's worth pointing out because we talked about it, last night, Minnesota did what Nebraska didn't do at Colorado in the third quarter. Think about this. So Nebraska had kicked Colorado's ass in the first half, but they were only up 17-0. Even Minnesota had kind of kicked Nebraska's ass, but it was only 14-0 at half. That's what was amazing about it, even rewatching. It's like, it's only 14-0. One score and you're back in this thing. But also the other thing is true. One score for the other way, and it feels like it's over.
Yep.
Did it not feel like when Nebraska took the field against Colorado, if they would have punched in a touchdown and it's 24-0,
Colorado would have just
quit and it's over.
Game's over.
And last night, same thing. Here comes Minnesota. Fleck did a good job. First play, they run that little they run a little pass. They hit Tyler Johnson in the seam. Big gain, and they go score, and the game's over.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just – sometimes I think it's important to point out when someone does what Nebraska still needs to do. We talk about, like, you know, being able to choke a team out and finish them when you have them on the ropes. Minnesota did that to start the third quarter. Nebraska didn't do that against Colorado. And, like, that's still something when you see it, I want to point it out because that's the game right there.
And I like I said, I missed that first drive, but you know, if we go scoring that first drive, the whole game's different. Like we turn over on downs, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, we just are.
Well, you know what's crazy?
That's where I don't know that. I mean, we're not close to where we need to be, but these games, we always look at these games, and it's always a handful of plays that swing the momentum. And we've just this year, I mean, the last 2 years, it's pretty amazing how many of those we've been on the wrong side of.
And that's a mark of a bad team that you can't overcome.
Yeah.
You know, like that your margin for error. But like, look at did you see this graphic during the game? At the 14-minute mark of the second quarter, plays in opponent territory. So, meaning across the 50.
Yeah.
Nebraska had 13 plays in Minnesota's territory. Minnesota only had 3. So for the first quarter, now granted, a lot of that stuff, like for the first quarter, like look at that.
We don't got the weapons right now to finish anybody off.
The job. And so
we're so predictable because we got nowhere else to go with it. I mean, I actually thought like Cade Warner looked like the only guy that I felt like, oh, we could throw to this guy.
Right.
He can get open and catch it.
Other than that,
I mean, do we can't throw it anybody else, no. Can we?
Not right now.
And Spielman, I don't know what happened to him, but he dropped 2 punts.
I mean, what is he doing on the 1 punt? Because that's the thing also, you know, because that's what here. Okay, I just wrote this down. So we talk about choking a team out in the third quarter. So first possession for Minnesota, they run the big pass, great play call because they've been, you know, what did Nebraska talk about all halftime? We got to get tough and stop that run, right? So what does Minnesota do? Yeah. Right over the top, okay? And then they punch it in. Nebraska then gets stuffed, and they run the fake punt at the 50.
Yeah.
Then
when I was watching that, I thought to myself, even after they stopped, I go, I like that they tried it. Because you know what? The game's over if you don't get it.
Like, they
were down 21-0. The only way you win that game probably, or even can be in it, is you get that first down, you go score. And so really, Allen, maybe if he runs the other side, he might have gotten it. But I don't
mind it.
I don't actually disagree.
I agree. Because
Frost in the presser basically was like, I probably shouldn't have called that. And I go, I like that you called it. Because you know what? We didn't have any other offense. So like,
they get stuffed on the fake punt. Then the next play was, remember, the Minnesota guy dropped. I mean, the tight end was wide open and dropped.
Well, the floodgates would have really opened if that guy scored.
So, and then Nebraska forced a punt.
Yep.
And that's when J.D. Spielman muffs the punt. Why he's catching it, he tried to catch it at the 6-yard line. It's like, what are you doing, man? Then Nebraska goes 3 and out, punts, and then Minnesota scores on the ensuing drive where Khalil Davis gets the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty where Frost was ripping him on the sidelines for punching him. But there you go. Two things, and then we'll run. Because you and I wanted to talk about this for a second. Because how much everything we talked about at the start of like a lot of this game wasn't about talent and it wasn't about skill. A lot of it was kind of like toughness.
Yeah.
How much can you coach and cultivate and increase a player's toughness? Because I think that's still a huge part of what's happening.
Not all of it, right? I mean, you got to have tough guys to start with, hopefully. But I do believe there's a culture of discipline and toughness that will, you know, sort of sharpen the swords. That's a real thing. You know, some people, you know, we're talking about Danny. Danny says you can't.
Yeah,
you can't coach it and grow it. Toughness. And I think there's a part of it you can't. I do think, like, you know, if you're not a tough person, you're never going to be. But everybody's got levels of it. There's people that are tougher than others. And I think if you have a culture where there are certain things that are tolerated and certain things that aren't, and
see, that's
no
it.
Exceptions, like that rubs off on people. And I think the people that, you know, need to make a leap do, and then if you can't make the leap, you kind of know you can't be there.
I think it's more about, rather than being like a individual coach coaching an individual person, I think it's more about what you're saying, the collective culture that a collective culture is going to maximize whatever toughness is inside of somebody.
Yeah.
And because if you have a bad culture around someone, it's probably you're going to, you're that person, because sometimes it's human nature to want to let yourself off the hook. And that person's going to probably not maximize on their toughness.
Well, I think it is human nature to take the shortcut and yeah. to, you know, take the easy route and
to
not
feel sorry for yourself.
And to feel sorry for yourself and not do the hard thing. You have to beat that out of most people.
Yes.
It's to me the rare people who are just, they're doing that to themselves. And they always have, right? Most people, you got to beat out that weakness out of yourself. And that to me is where the culture side of it is so important. And like I said, I'm a supporter of Frost, and I think that they are on the right path with all that. I think that we got to be honest with ourselves and say, you know, there's a percentage of this team that's probably still not there.
Quite there. That's why I wrote the question down of like, because that's, I mean, you just watch that game. That game's not, like, a lot of that game came down to all the cliches of like, your, you know, heart, will, desire, toughness, competitive pride. Like, that's what a lot of last
cold,
night was.
It's cold, it's rainy, it's ugly, it's physical. Like, who wants it and who doesn't? I mean, a lot of it's that. Because when you both know your plays, we knew their plays, they knew ours, and they beat us up. You go, it's pretty simple. Like, I don't think the talent gap is that big between us and Minnesota.
No, it's not.
So that's where I'm going.
They hung 53 on them last. You know what I mean? They blew them out of the water, and it was
It's not Ohio State, so that one, we're going to have to go home, take this week off, take a long look in a big mirror.
Yes.
And go.
And figure out, they better come back, figure out what they're, who they're going to be offensively and find something that works consistently in the run game.
Yeah.
I mean,
I swear to you, I'm not one of those guys that's like, you know, that does the cliche. Oh, you know, if he doesn't want to play, we'll find somebody who does. Well, a lot of times you don't have somebody, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, again, if you are not a tough physical football player and you're not playing with heart, I would rather play somebody who's physically almost not ready to do it, who's going to do it hard, because at least get this guy. If we're playing for next year anyway, at that point, I think it's important then to go, who wants to play?
Yeah, I think,
and I'm not usually one of those guys, but if this continues, then you gotta give these younger guys almost maybe more of a look.
If they can physically and mentally even do it, right?
They maybe need to do
it. If you have a choice with it, I mean, maybe it's one of those things where Frost can kind of say, like, listen, guys, I will not win I'm more than willing to not win another game, but I'm gonna do it with the guys that are gonna do it the right way and fight and all that shit.
You know, or like that, like, you know, the Nelson kid, the freshman, like, I don't know if that kid's physically ready to play. I don't know if he mentally knows the scheme well enough. I would probably bet you, though, that that guy's tough.
Yeah.
And that guy will put his head through the wall for you. And my point with that is, at some point, maybe a guy like that, just you say,
yeah,
go do it.
Right.
And we're gonna deal with the mistakes you're going to make and maybe the touchdowns you give up, but it's not going to be from lack of, you know, fighting in there.
What's hard, though, how important is it that they get to a bowl game?
It's funny. I always think in terms of titles. Like, bowl games, I don't know that that's that big of a deal to me.
Yeah.
You're talking
to a guy that I think all.
Here's where they need it, though. Let me retract that, because it's actually not about the bowl, it's about the practices.
Yeah. That's the one thing. They need as much time practicing and working on shit as possible.
Because the bowl games are less meaningful now that they have the
playoff. Right.
So, but that doesn't mean bowl games aren't great. It's great for the fans. But the players, to get those practices, they need every last one of them.
Yeah.
These young guys that we're trying to develop, they actually start getting, I mean, they're doing scout team stuff right now. They'll get actual reps.
If you wanted to in the bowl game, you could just throw a lot of those young guys and say, like, listen, I mean, that's a part of the reason why they do the whole redshirt rule now. It's like, if you theoretically wanted to, say Nebraska goes 6-6 and they're going to play roast beef state in the fucking Clark Kellogg Bowl, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you wanted, you could just say, like, we're starting all of the young guys.
Yeah. I think you want to reward the guys that have worked hard, but, like, same time, like, you're getting these young guys ready for the next year, the year that's going to matter more. I mean, so as it's looking like.
Do you think, and it's just funny how what a difference a week makes. I mean, you know, because you always end up feeling stupid and you want to, you usually, you know, Frost started the presser basically being like, it's never as bad as you think. It's never as good as you think. I don't know where I stand on that with that currently with this team in the moment today.
It feels bad right now, but I agree. I think that things have not fallen the right way to start this tenure of them. So it really has just gone. It's been 2 years of just like, wow, just keeps not going our way. We have to fight our way out of it.
What's funny about this was, and again, like something like Big Ten Media Days, I've realized was like, to the average fan, I mean, it doesn't even matter, but like media gets all fired up about it. So like, what's said at Big Ten Media Day? Like, can you recall one thing that was said at Big Ten Media Days this summer? Like, So like, but at Big Ten Media Days, they asked Bill Moose about like expectations this year. And Bill Moose said, we just got to find a way to get to 6 wins. And at the time, everyone was like, 6 wins? What? And even to Frost was like, well, I hope we win a little more than 6 games. All of a sudden now, that doesn't sound so crazy. So
Moose is a smart guy.
Yes. So Moose, he must have come down and said,
here's what Moose is a smart guy.
He's a former player.
And he knows that Frost is the right guy, and he knows to set the bar low, because he needs, because that stuff matters. You know, if he says 9 wins, then all of a sudden people that don't understand what's going on get up in arms. Where by setting it at 6, you know, I hope we get to 6. But if we get to 6, then he says, well, we're right on track. And if we're close but short, he's like, well, we're almost there. But if you say 9 and that's the expectation, well, then if you don't make it, then you have to address why we're so off and what's wrong.
How disappointed are you that they didn't meet your
standard? Do we need to do something about this? Because some people don't get it, and that's what they fall to. But he's smart enough to know, set it low. Let's build this slowly and keep the right coach here for 5 to 7 years, and let's see what
that's
we are
in
5 to 7 years.
And I know, I mean, real quick along those lines, and I mean, certainly, this is a podcast that's pro-Frost and all in on Frost, and I still think he's going to get her done and all that stuff. But the people that, like, I mean, Nebraska's been in this cycle of wanting, because I've heard some people saying, you know, they need to look at certain guys on the staff and all that stuff. Like, well, you know what? For a long time around here, the answer has always been firing people. And where's that gotten you? Like, at some point, you need to pick, like you need kind of like pick and stick with.
Yeah.
And that's what needs to happen with this crew. But it is going to be interesting. Like, so they have 5 games left. They got Indiana coming to town, then they're at Purdue, then they got a bye week, and then they got Wisconsin and Lincoln, then at Maryland and Iowa. I mean, I almost think they have to win these next 2 games to get to a bowl game. If they don't win these next 2 games, I'm telling you, you heard it right here on October. Wisconsin is going to dismember this football team. They are going to dismember them.
They're not a good matchup for us right now.
We talk about tough dude. Like that is like every guy that's on that field is a tough fucker.
Well, and they got a great running back who.
Oh God.
Who, you know what? If you're not ready to tackle, I mean, you think so? What Minnesota's those backs did? Like they're not even in the ballpark of what that guy is. So we better. I mean,
I just think the next 3 weeks are huge. They need to get healthy and get right here during this bye week.
Huge for different reasons. Last week, the game was huge because we had a chance for the Big Ten West. These next 2 games are huge because then the season isn't like a utter catastrophe.
It's almost like you go get right, get healthy, beat Indiana, beat Purdue. You're going to a bowl. Then for the final 4 weeks, you know, take a bye week, and then for the final 3 weeks of the season, just go swing away. Yeah. You know, you might be taking on an undefeated Wisconsin team in your house. Just go swing away. Then you go on to Maryland, whatever, and then you got Iowa. That game's always gets the juices going. Go swing away.
Yeah.
But the next 3 weeks are huge.
Yeah.
Real quick, as we wrap this up, what do you, and I'm sure every coach is different, like how does a, take people behind the scenes, how does a bye week work for the players? Now, I know Frost has said that he's going to like let the guys kind of like
take a couple days. You'll work out though. Like you'll take a couple days and they'll probably have, they may or may not watch film the day after, but I mean, they'll have a couple, like maybe 2 days off and then maybe 2 days of, they have to just go do a workout, but like they don't have to like probably play football for maybe four days.
Okay.
And then maybe they'll have like a quick little practice or something, but then the next week, you know, then it's back to normal. But I mean, to have that week and they'll have Saturday and Sunday off probably.
And how much does it help to be able to work on yourself? Because it seems like every week you get into this, you're constantly in like implementing a game plan. And now it does feel like, because we talked about how they haven't had an opportunity to have a bye for a long time. Like in the season, in the moment, it's probably going to be nice that Frost and those guys are going to get a moment to really work on themselves.
Yeah. I mean, for the coaches too, like I said, they you know, they're going to have a full week to just sort of get mentally, even as a coaching staff.
Yeah. They need a break probably.
Give them a break. I mean, I know my brother's been looking forward to a bye week.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so they'll take some time, and there's no doubt stepping away from things and taking the, you know, 10,000 foot view of, well, what's going on? What do we see? What do we need to fix? That'll help. You don't have as much time when you're already on to the next one.
Because they look like everybody with it from the everybody on the sideline and like they look like a group that needed a bye week.
They do.
And it's huge because they got to get a lot of these guys healthy.
Are we taking a bye week then?
What? No, we got to do something. What are we gonna do? What are we gonna do with? Someone asked me the other day. It's like, what are you and Bo gonna do on
the? We still haven't done the wine pod.
We got to do a wine pod. I think I want. Do we want to set up an email to do where people can kind of email us mailbag questions?
That's a great idea.
You want to do that?
And we'll answer them while drinking the
wine. We'll drink a bottle of wine. You guys can mail. I'll set it up. I'll tweet out all the information on it.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what we'll do.
Really zinger a question.
Just have fun with
great questions.
Because even one thing I thought about in the Crouch Pod, I started to get into the most iconic plays in Nebraska football history. And I was like, okay, so you have, you know, the Davison catch, you have Johnny Rogers punt return, you have Frazier against Florida, and then I, you know, Black 41 flash versus pass. Like, are we sure those are the top four in any order, and is there one more?
Oh, I mean, if you're looking at 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and you had to list the top, I mean, those are the most probably iconic, but there's probably 10 other plays that if people throughout you go, oh, yeah, that one.
You know what's sad is, you know what, when I start listing off plays, like in our head, you know, you know what one of the first plays that come to mind is? Is the missed two-point conversion in 83.
That's iconic. That is, that's top three most iconic, probably.
Just because of the magnitude of the moment.
It was unbelievably huge. It's huge. It was a national title.
You talk about some stones, T.O.
T.O. didn't want to go swimming that day because he'd be at the bottom of the list.
It was
going to
anchor. He was going to anchor himself.
Let me just tell you something about T.O. He goes right to the bottom of the pool. Poor guy.
I mean, how cool is that? Dude went for.
Hey.
Imagine coaching for. He'd have been coaching for what? That'd have been his 11th year?
Yep.
Chasing a title, all that stuff. All he would have had to do was kick that field goal. Probably had it. And he said, nah, fuck that. Let's go for two.
That's
kind of tight.
That's serious.
That's kind of tight. But, that's serious. But things like that. So maybe that, let's maybe plan on that.
Some silly questions, some good Husker questions.
We'll plan on.
Open anything.
We will literally, on the pod, we'll take a picture. We'll open the bottle of wine on the pod so you can actually hear the cork coming out. And then
it won't just be a sound effect.
No, we'll do a real one. And then the pod won't
end till the wine's done.
No. And if we happen to open a second bottle.
Two bottles.
I don't know about that. I will be out of my mind. I'm a lightweight these days. But anything we miss, anything on, I mean, I thought
That was a rough one. Hopefully this is the roughest of our tenure for the next 5 years of this. Let's hope this is
it. Here's the thing. Minnesota, they got their ass kicked at Nebraska last year. And after that point, I think they're 9-1 or something like that. They went on and like it turned a corner. Maybe this will somehow, things will flip and they'll finish this thing strong. I hope we can go back and laugh at like how doom and gloom everyone was at this, but we shall see. So this week at some point, be on the lookout for a mailbag pod. I'll tweet out some of the information for it and we'll go from there. That sounds good.
Love it.
All right. In the meantime, you want to go to Blockbuster and rent a movie?
Yeah. Do we got to rewind those things still?
Yeah, I don't know about that. Let's go to Blockbuster.
Okay.
A Parkville Media production.